have concerns that they violated the Wilderness Act, and we will be looking into this further.
Environmentalists say the government went behind the public's back to survey the Eisenbeck Refuge. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage officials employ new methods to clear away illegal homeless camps.
That kind of squalor is unsafe for the people camping there and certainly for the people using those public green spaces.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
Conservation groups say the Interior Department has gone behind the public's back to conduct a land survey in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge in the corridor of the proposed King Cove Road. A memo from Fish and Wildlife Service says the work would involve 80 helicopter landings over 2 days and driving 122 metal survey markers into the ground.
We have concerns that they violated the Wilderness Act, and we will be looking into this further.
That's Nicole Whittington Evans of the Wilderness Society, one of several groups that filed a lawsuit in January to block the proposed road. Controversy over the road has existed for 20 years or more. The community of King Cove wants the road to get to Cold Bay, which they say would save lives in medical emergencies. Conservation groups are fiercely opposed to the road. They say it would damage an area of worldwide significance to waterfowl, bears, and other wildlife. In January, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke signed a land trade agreement to swap the proposed land corridor for private land owned by the King Cove Corporation. The agreement calls for a survey to determine the value of the land. In a July 12th memo, the regional chief of the refuge system wrote that the land trade agreement says the survey must be conducted, so they didn't go through the regular management review process. If a full environmental review had been deemed necessary, the public would have had a chance to weigh in. The memo says government officials decided to do the work with helicopters, so the period of disturbance would be limited to 2 days. Brooke Bryson is an attorney at Trustees for Alaska, a law firm that filed a legal challenge to the land trade on behalf of several environmental groups.
The Wilderness Act is a very protective statute, and it prohibits things like helicopters and installations in wilderness. And Eisenbeck is wilderness. So we're looking very closely at the legality of those survey activities, and we are evaluating next steps with our clients.
Bryson's lawsuit claims the land exchange is illegal, though she has not obtained a court order that would have prevented the survey work. A spokeswoman for the Fish and Wildlife Service says the survey work in the refuge was completed this week. Neither the service nor the Interior Department responded to questions about the legality of the work by our deadline. The Trump administration is trying to make it easier for developers to navigate the Endangered Species Act, but environmental groups are criticizing a set of wide-ranging revisions announced today. They're calling the changes a wrecking ball aimed at the 45-year-old law that protects species like polar bears and sea otters. Two federal agencies, the Interior and Commerce Departments, announced the revisions in a phone call with reporters. Earl Comstock is with the Commerce Department.
By streamlining the process, you increase the public's buy-in, because people don't see this necessarily in such an adversarial light. Communities can get their projects while we protect the resources.
In Alaska, the Endangered Species Act has been the subject of lawsuit after lawsuit. That's in part because required habitat protections can make it more difficult or expensive to develop projects like oil and gas infrastructure. Industry groups have long been pushing for change. Marliana Hall works for the Resource Development Council, which advocates for Alaska businesses that produce oil, minerals, timber, and fish.
I think oftentimes it's been used as a tool to really just put up additional roadblocks and to prevent responsible development.
The proposed change fits into a broader Trump administration effort to cut regulation of industry. Among the Endangered Species Act revisions is one that could address climate change. It would give managers permission to ignore climate change impacts when deciding whether to protect endangered species habitat. That's because the Endangered Species Act itself doesn't empower the government to stop threats like shrinking glaciers, rising sea levels, or melting snow, according to the Trump administration. Environmental groups say that provision appears to target polar bears. Brett Hartle is with the Center for Biological Diversity.
They definitely were thinking about drilling in the Arctic when they wrote that.
Hartle says the proposal takes a defeatist attitude towards species threatened by climate change.
They're basically saying polar bear sea ice, yeah, it's critical to the species, but even if we designated it, we couldn't protect it anyway because we have no tool at our disposal to address climate change. So, you know, why bother?
Hartle says environmental groups will challenge the proposal in court once it's finalized. A public comment period comes first. The federal government has joined Governor Bill Walker's administration in choosing not to extend the road from Juneau. Walker announced in 2016 that he wasn't going ahead with the project, but the new federal decision finalizes that choice. Road opponents celebrated. Buck Lindekugel is a lawyer for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
This is a huge victory for the Aquan, the original settlers of Juneau, who were able to safeguard their ancestral lands from destructive road building. It's a victory for folks who care about Berners Bay and the incredible fish and wildlife resources there.
He says the state should spend the money the legislature set aside for the project to fund improvements to the ferry docks in Haines and Skagway. Denny DeWitt of the First Things First Alaska Foundation, a pro-road group, characterized it as a setback.
The option that this governor has chosen puts the project into limbo. The federal folks signed off on his recommendation. And when we get a new governor, we'll talk to the new governor about proceeding with the project.
It's not clear how the state will spend $43 million it has set aside. Ora Landau is a spokeswoman for the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
It will remain into the account until an acceptable alternative concept to advance transportation access for Juneau is proposed and agreed upon by stakeholders.
For now, the state loses access to the federal money for the project. The federal government would have covered more than 90% of the cost. Landau says the state would seek a federal match for any project it funds with the money that's set aside. The state won't have to repay federal money it already spent. Officials in Anchorage are pushing forward with a new plan to more quickly clear away unlawful camps in the city's parks and greenbelts. Critics say homeless people in the camps are trashing the woods, committing crime, and making the city's public trails feel less safe. But others say the encampments are one of the only options for people with nowhere else to go. Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports.
As rain trickles down, John Weddleton pokes around in the woods, looking for things that aren't supposed to be there, like this improvised fort tucked back in a thicket.
Tarps over the sticks and a tent inside.
It's a small homeless camp. Weddleton is a member of the Anchorage Assembly and keenly interested in one of the body's main questions: what to do about people setting up unlawful encampments throughout public green spaces. As public consternation has grown more intense, the Assembly has budgeted more funds for cleaning up abandoned camps, and they recently passed a measure speeding up the timeline for disassembling encampments that are close to trails, ball fields, schools, and other public recreation facilities. The details of that change are still being worked out, and it remains to be seen what difference it'll make. Weddleton follows what look like thin game trails winding through the woods near Chester Creek. It feels remote back here. You'd hardly know that just over a little knoll is an apartment complex.
One thing that's so offensive about these is that they're scary because they're so trashed. It's just disgust. I mean, they're hazmat sites.
On a given day, there are around 1,100 homeless people in Anchorage, and a portion of them stay in improvised shelters and encampments throughout the city's ample green belt. Anyone familiar with the camps will tell you they can be extremely dangerous. As if to underscore this point, a woman dressed all in black walks by, playing music on her cell phone. Weddleton strikes up a conversation and asks if she feels unsafe walking along the trails, given all the camps.
No, I live in these camps for 3 years.
The woman's name is Toni Anorek.
These woods are crazy. Everybody lately, honestly, has been getting out.
Anorek says the area feels scarier, more dangerous. There are heroin deaths, bear encounters that have sent people looking for camp spots further away, and there's a lot of chaos and violence. 2 years ago, Anorek herself was brutally attacked.
Like, all right, for instance, I was chopped up in Valley of the Moon right across the street.
You were someone.
Weddleton is a little confused, so Anorek spells it out. She was hacked with a machete and pulls back her shirt to show the thick red scar running all the way across her back.
Holy.
That's just one of six. The other one's right here on my neck.
Could you live?
Across my head, right here, my hand.
Anorak doesn't stick around to answer other questions. Not far away is one of the sections of the trail system most densely populated with camps. Earlier in the week, cleanup crews from the city's Parks and Rec Department mostly cleared it of abandoned garbage. And this is one of the city's main approaches to managing homelessness, telling individuals their camps are unlawful, then returning 10 days later to dismantle and clear anything left.
We cleaned out over there, all the way to Gamble.
Greg Jacobson has worked for the city for years, overseeing camp cleanup. He shows off raw patches of dirt, where trees have been stripped out for firewood or shelter, and mounds of black trash bags are filled with collected debris.
Lots of clothes brought in, bike parts, needles.
Waste management is a huge part of the camp abatement policy. As of last week, the city had removed 92 tons of garbage from camps since the start of the year. And a lot of that trash is hazardous. Hundreds of propane tanks, food scraps that invite bears, and piles of excrement that seep into nearby waterways. And there's criticism the policy is fundamentally flawed, that it basically pays city employees to shuffle homeless people around. Jacobson surveys the site they just finished cleaning.
And because it's all cleared out like this, somebody's going to move back in real quick. We're housekeeping. Somebody will move back in.
The mayor's administration says that dealing with camps is one piece in longer-term steps they've taken to get more homeless people into housing. Nancy Burke is the city's homelessness coordinator and says social workers use the contacts during abatement to connect with individuals and gather data.
And so we've been using the camp ordinance and the processes that go around that as an organizing principle for outreach, basically.
Burke concedes that many residents are frustrated with a camping situation that appears to have gotten worse. But she says more individuals, many of them with severe mental health and substance abuse problems, have gotten into housing, and that overall, homelessness is slowly trending downward.
The visual doesn't always match the progress that I know. Like, I'm so excited about the progress we're having, but the residents are not feeling that. And so what I need to make sure I'm doing is helping them understand the long-term play. It is a very complex system.
Even with an overall strategy for addressing homelessness, there are sympathetic critics who feel the current policy towards camps is unacceptable. Russ Webb spent decades with the state of Alaska, working on issues connected to substance abuse and mental health. He takes photos of massive sprawling encampments to report for cleanup near his neighborhood.
That kind of squalor is unsafe for the people camping there, and certainly for the people using those public green spaces, including kids.
Webb says people live on the streets for lots of different reasons, and there are those with no interest in getting housed. He believes official policy, focused primarily on long-term solutions, has created passive acceptance of what's happening now.
What we haven't done is focus on the campers who are young, capable, involved in criminal activities, and victimizing others, not other campers as well as others in the community.
Webb says it's not an either-or approach to homelessness. It needs to be both. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a woman seeking to unseat Congressman Young has never visited Alaska.
Storms are getting worse and worse. They're losing their homes. They're having to relocate. This hit home with me. I need to do something about it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The federal government is asking for public input on its next North Slope oil lease sale in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. At last year's sale, the Trump administration put all 900 available tracts up for bid. That added up to more than 10 million acres, the most ever offered in a single oil lease sale in the reserve. In the end, oil companies only bid on 7 tracts. Earlier lease sales were more successful. Oil company ConocoPhillips is currently pursuing several significant developments in the NPRA. Environmental groups are legally challenging both last year's sale and the 2016 sale, which was under the Obama administration. Those lawsuits are still pending. The Bureau of Land Management is taking comments on the 2018 lease sale until August 20th. Three bears shot and killed in Eagle River in the wake of two maulings, including one that was fatal, are not the bears responsible for the attacks. That's according to the Department of Fish and Game, which tested the bears' DNA against evidence at the scene of the June maulings that occurred near the end of Highland Road. The bear blame for the maulings remains on the loose. Fish and Game says it was a sow brown bear that attacked and killed 44-year-old Michael Soltis, who lived in the area and was out for a hike. Soltis was reported missing, and police said the same bear was apparently guarding his body when it attacked another man 2 days later who was a member of a search party looking for Soltis. That victim survived, and efforts to trap or find the bear have been ongoing since then. Fish and Game spokesperson Ken Marsh says department personnel shot a sow bear and two yearling cubs on Friday near where Soltis's body had been discovered, roughly 3 weeks after the attacks. Fish and Game announced today that DNA tests showed the sow bear and cubs that were shot did not attack either man. A Juneau-based tribe remains mum over the purpose of an intensive land clearing operation on Douglas Island. It's on land leased by Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. KTOO's Jacob Resnick checked it out.
On a recent afternoon, smoke billows from a clearing in the forest near the Eagle Crest ski area. An excavator loads felled trees and piles of brush into a smoldering burn pile. No trespassing signs are posted, but the work is clearly visible from the road. The signs are emblazoned with Tlingit and Haida's tribal logo. It's one of the largest tribal governments in southeast Alaska. Asked about the work, Tlingit and Haida's spokeswoman Rhianne Holmes pointed to an August 2016 statement by the tribe's president, Richard Peterson. In it, he spoke of developing a diverse retail, cultural, and entertainment project.
As for the land clearing taking place up Fish Creek Road, we just don't have any specific information to share. It's all really in the conceptual stages of development, and the focus right now is on clearing and backfilling to create usable land.
In an updated statement Tuesday, Holmes reiterated that
Tlingit Haida remains committed to being a community partner, contributing to the economic sustainability of Southeast Alaska, and continuing to meet the needs of our tribal citizens.
But that doesn't answer the question of what the tribe's plans are. More details, Holmes added, would come at a later date. The land in question has an interesting history and a complicated legal status. It's owned by the heirs of an Angoon man who once held about 100 acres on Admiralty Island. In 2002, the U.S. Forest Service swapped that land for 220 acres on Douglas Island. In 2015, the heirs leased 20 of those acres to Tlingit and Haida, which began clearing land in mid-June. Juneau City Manager Rory Watt said he's had conversations with the tribe's leadership where they've discussed
conceptual plans to build some type of cultural center. I'm not sure on the exact details.
Speculation arose that the tribe was interested in gambling operations after Tlingit and Haida registered its gaming ordinance with the National Indian Gaming Commission. That's the federal body that has some oversight over gambling on tribal lands. In the 2016 statement, the tribe also ruled out casino-style gaming, but said it's interested in restarting its bingo operation. Tribes can't run gaming just anywhere. It has to be on sovereign lands known as Indian Country. One way is for the land to be put into federal trust, a process that's been fraught with legal controversy in Alaska and recently stalled by the Trump administration. Another type is tracts ceded to individuals under a 1906 law that allotted land to Alaska Natives. This acreage on Douglas Island was swapped for one of those allotments. There are also legal questions over whether allotments in Alaska are fully sovereign Indian country. Alaska's Attorney General wrote a legal opinion in October 2017 saying that question remains untested in the courts, but it cited case law from other states that suggested it could be. In the meantime, the work continues off Fish Creek Road. On Douglas Island, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A young pilot is dead and two passengers injured after a plane crashed Wednesday night in Willow. Alaska State Troopers identified the pilot as 24-year-old Colt Richter of Anchorage. According to his Facebook page, Richter graduated from MIT in 2016. Richter was flying for Anchorage-based Regal Air. His plane took off from Willow Lake Wednesday evening with two passengers and cargo on board. According to the trooper dispatch, Richter's plane crashed in a wooded residential area in Willow immediately after takeoff. It sparked a fire in the area, and the crash was then reported to Alaska State Troopers around 7 p.m. Forestry, fire, and wildlife troopers joined medics and state troopers on scene. Richter's next of kin has been notified, and the two others reportedly suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating the incident.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
A legislative ethics panel says it found by clear and convincing evidence that an Alaska lawmaker violated ethics law by disclosing the existence of a complaint that was considered confidential. At a public hearing Tuesday, Representative David Eastman denied that he had done this. The ethics panel says that was the first definitive denial offered by Eastman and was inconsistent with statements he previously made to an investigator. The Alaska Journal of Commerce in January reported that Eastman told one of its reporters in April of 2017 that a complaint had been filed against Representative Gabrielle Ledoux and suggested the reporter check with the ethics office. The House in January removed Eastman from his seat on the ethics committee after he was accused of the breach. No additional sanctions were recommended. Out of the field of six candidates running to unseat Congressman Don Young this fall, there is one who never set foot in Alaska. KBBI's Aaron Bolton explains.
Carol Hafner is a Democrat running for Alaska's sole U.S. House of Representatives seat. She lists a South Dakota address on her filings with the State Division of Elections. That address belongs to a mail drop service near Rapid City, South Dakota. Hafner also has two New Jersey addresses on file with the division, and she said in an interview that she's currently residing in New York, but would not say where.
I've been in transition for a long time. Unfortunately, I have some health issues as a result of my dealing with the storm surge. I'm still dealing with these physical issues.
The storm surge she's referring to is Hurricane Sandy, and she says that was the impetus for her to run for office in Alaska.
And for people living in these areas where the environment is so fragile and these floods are getting worse and worse, the storms are getting worse and worse, they're losing their homes. They're having to relocate. This hit home with me. I need to do something about it.
Even though Hafner's never been to Alaska, that wouldn't disqualify her. The U.S. Constitution only requires House candidates to be at least 25 years old and a U.S. citizen for 7 years. Forrest Neighbors chairs University of Alaska Anchorage's Political Science Department.
So what that means is, according to our national constitution, a candidate could conceivably run in a primary or run in a general election without actually being resident, but they would have to be a resident in that state or in that district at the time of election.
But others have questioned Hafner's candidacy. Two complaints with the State Division of Elections questioned her real identity and her actual address. But both were discarded because they were received past the June 11th deadline. Top Democratic Party officials in Alaska, like Jay Parmley, say they still find her candidacy questionable.
I think the voters have a right to know that Carol Hafner, you know, doesn't live in Alaska, is not an Alaskan, and is questionable as to where she really lives or is registered to vote even.
Legalities aside, political scientist Neighbors says her chances in the primary are a long shot at best.
It's more likely to happen if the candidate is well known nationally and the state in which that candidate is running tends to lean in the political partisan direction that the candidate is already leans. In the case of Hillary Clinton, New York was a perfect state. In the case of Illinois and Alan Keyes's run, it was not favorable territory for his election, and he lost to the well-known Senator Barack Obama.
As for Hafner, she has no plans to bring her primary campaign to Alaska. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Governor Bill Walker's Climate Action Task Force met Wednesday to discuss a draft document that could influence the state's climate change policy in the future. As the plans come together, the team is trying to build from its mission to act bold. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
The Climate Action Task Force had something new to work with this week, a report from the Oil and Gas Technical Committee, which is a group made up of task force members and a mix of volunteers and includes representatives from industry. Overall, that report suggests that hard numbers for reducing carbon emissions won't come easy, especially since industry emissions have already decreased since 2005, though economists aren't entirely sure why. But the governor's task force is still trying to set some clear goals. The current draft plan includes language to reduce oil and gas emissions by 30% over 2005 levels by 2030. To help achieve that, the document includes the prospect of upgrading the North Slope's energy infrastructure. On the conference call, Alaska Energy Authority's executive director, Janet Reiser, says that project seems like a heavy lift.
I have big concerns about the ability of this project to be economic or even beneficial to any real degree.
There was another sticking point in the nearly two-hour-long meeting. Should the task force include the words climate change in its policy statement on science education and encourage more curriculum related to that? It was included in an earlier draft. Larry Hinsman, a vice chancellor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, suggested treading lightly.
If people think that we are trying to indoctrinate their children, you know, that could kill the whole program.
But Mark Misteller, the task force member who helped craft the policy statement, disagreed.
We're using climate change in many parts of the document, and what our charge is to lead on the issues related to climate change.
In the end, the task force members seemed to come to the broad conclusion to act bold and potentially include the language. The next meeting is August 2nd in Anchorage, and the task force hopes to have the draft policy completed by September. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And finally tonight, a correction. In a story last evening about a non-fatal plane crash on Prince of Wales Island, the pilot was identified as a Temsco Air pilot. He is in fact a pilot for Takuan Air. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Nat Herz, Zachariah Hughes, Casey Grove, Elizabeth Harbaugh, and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Jacob Resnick in Douglas, and Aaron Bolton in Homer. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.